in a heartbeat. Our world changed. Welcome to Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy.
This is Michael Patrick Leahy. Welcome to Paradigm Shift, the weekly program that focuses on what the world will be like after the coronavirus lockdown orders end, and we await the development of a vaccine. We focus on five general areas in this program. It's a one-hour program. Every Saturday, you hear it here on Talk Radio 98.3 and 1510 WLAC from 6 a.m. to 7. The areas we focus on are your own personal behavior and actions, you know, where are you going to go shop and what you're going to do and how you're going to spend your time when you're not working. Another area we focus on is how you're going to make a living. That's what will jobs be like and the economy and business be like after the first wave of this pandemic passes and we return to somewhat normal. Third area is politics. How's that going to change? Fourth area is health and healthcare and hospitals and all of those issues for you and your family. And then lastly, we look at education. How is that going to be different? I mean, are people going to be doing more online training and how will private education, public education respond? The program, as I said, is broadcast every Saturday from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. here on Talk Radio 98.3 and 1510 WLAC. You hear me every weekday morning on this station from 5 a.m. to 8 on the Tennessee Star Report. In today's program, we'll hear from Crom Carmichael, Washington journalist Neil McCabe, and former Trump White House chief strategist, my good friend, mentor, former boss, and friend, Steve Bannon. But first, some breaking news from yesterday. So this is a story from Breitbart News, and it's an important story. A lot of people have been wondering about this. How many people have been infected by coronavirus and haven't known it? And this is important because it gets to the issue of what are the real mortality rates. I mean, we know what the mortality rate is in terms of the number of people who have been tested for it. 4.5 million people in the United States have been tested, and about 825,000 or so have tested positive. Of those who have tested positive, about 45,000 have died. So that means, you know, you've got a death rate there of about 4.9%, 5%. It's pretty high, particularly when you compare it to the flu or something like that, where it's much lower. But some people have wondered, you know, are a lot of people out there, have they been infected, have been either asymptomatic, or have they perhaps, you know, just had mild responses to it? A lot of people thought, well, maybe a lot of folks have it. Well, we have actually, of all people, Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York yesterday detailed at his at a press briefing that the preliminary results of a statewide antibody study revealed that, wait for it, 13.9% of people who live in New York State have developed antibodies to the coronavirus. And it's interesting because if you look at that, there are regional differences within New York. New York City, that number is 21%. Of course, New York City has been devastated by this. You have the highest death rates in New York City and the highest transmissions there. Governor Cuomo said the survey, this is interesting now, the survey was conducted among 3,000 individuals over 2 days, and it covered 19 counties and 40 different localities. The samples, the blood samples, were collected at grocery stores and other retail stores, and the people were being tested out of the home and not at work. So these are people that were out and about. Here's exactly how Governor Cuomo described it. Quote, these were people who were out and about shopping. They were not people who were in their home. They are not people who were isolated. They are not people who are quarantined. These are people who are not at work, so they are probably not essential workers, he said. Well, I'm not sure if that's true, but that's what Cuomo said. And he said that information, quote, has to be calibrated. So the regional look at this information says 21.2% in New York City tested positive for developing antibodies, 16.7% tested positive in Long Island, 11.7% tested positive in Westchester and Rockland. Now that's, you know, that's metropolitan New York, that area. The distance from sort of Rockland County to New York City is 70 miles maybe. And Long Island, the edge of Long Island to downtown Manhattan, about 70 miles. And so they did, as it's often since I'm originally from upstate New York, I know that in New York State, they don't really pay much attention to upstaters. There's been a movement, of course, in upstate New York. People want to be separate from from downstate New York, have two states. I think that would be probably a pretty good idea, but not something that's going to happen. Anyways, in upstate New York, as you might imagine, 3.6% tested positive in the rest of the state. So I think that's very interesting. And if that's true, then here's the key. If 13% of the population of New York State is about 2 million, if you have a death rate of about 15,000, that would be about a less than half of 1% death rate. That's far, far less than people thought. It's a lot closer to the flu. It's still, I think, a little higher than the flu, but it puts this in a big, in a context. If this is true, then getting coronavirus will not be as starkly difficult and troublesome and scary as people thought. But we'll see how this all plays out. That's kind of the breaking news. Up next, in our next segments, we'll talk to Prom Carmichael, Neil McCabe, and Steve Bannon. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. We'll be back with Paradigm Shift after this.
Now, back to Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy.
And welcome back to Paradigm Shift. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. We talked with Prom Carmichael earlier this week about the efforts of various governors in the states to, well, I don't know, lock down folks and violate their constitutional rights. Here's Prom.
This is getting to where it is hurting tens of millions of Americans. And that's what... When we get to opening, it's really interesting to watch. I did spend Sunday watching a lot of the talk shows, and Chuck Todd is probably the most reprehensible of all of them because he's so, at least he is so obvious in his left leaning and his comments. But here, let me give you a couple of things that are kind of interesting. Trump has, the left went crazy when Trump said that that the governors had to do whatever he told them to do. They were absolutely crazy. And then when he said that the governors would make the decisions on how they would open their states, then they go crazy over that. And Chuck Todd said all Trump's trying to do is blame the governors. But here's the situation. The states themselves are very similar to the country in that in each state, there are some spots that are hotter spots than others. In some states, there are actually not any hot spots by what you would define as a hot spot. There are some states that are almost completely clear of the virus. But even the state of Michigan, for example, which is considered one of the more difficult states, there are 83 jurisdictions in the state of Michigan. There are five jurisdictions out of 83 that are having real problems. The other 78 are relatively mild, and that means that there are very few cases and very few deaths within those jurisdictions.
Yes, and so the five also, aren't they? Those five jurisdictions are all in and around Detroit, I think, aren't they?
I think they are. Yeah. I would guess that at least three are, maybe all five are. But the point is, there's 78 jurisdictions where the governor ought to be able to see her way to say, you know, we can treat these jurisdictions different than we do the other jurisdictions and let these people get back to work so that they're not living in poverty, because poverty is the greatest killer of everything. We've been hearing that for decades. For decades, the left has told us that poverty is the great killer. Well, it is. And so the question has always been, how do you get people out of poverty? And what the left seems to want is as many people as possible put into poverty by the government. And that is just, you know, when you start trying to absorb that, that is frightening in what it means, because what is the constituent of the left? The constituent of the left is the government union thugs. And what did Pelosi want? She wanted money for state and local governments. Government employees have not taken a pay cut at all.
Nowhere.
And I'm not advocating.
In no state have they taken a cut.
Right. And the federal government employees have not taken a cut. And so this is the private sector, which, by the way, the private sector is what is a robust private sector is what is required in order for the government to pay it, to be able over time to pay its employees well. Let's look at Nashville just as an example. If restaurants end up collapsing in Nashville, or if they end up operating at 50% of capacity for an extended period of time, if tourism is non-existent, then what happens? Our hotel taxes drop to a very, very low level. Our beer and wine taxes at restaurants drop to a very, very low level. The conferences, the convention center, all of the public facilities, the big public facilities, turn into net losers of revenue. I mean, net operating losses. And what will Mayor Cooper then be forced to do? He'll be forced to dramatically cut Metro pay. He'll have no choice. That's what he'll have to do. And yet the left wants that result, although they don't want that final result, but they want everything that it would take to lead up to that, by having as much poverty in the private sector as possible. And a person whose pay ought to be cut to $10,000 a year is Bill Maher, and all of his net worth should be taken away, because he's the one who advocates these types of things. And then let him see what it feels like to be a person who had a small business and made a reasonable living out of that business, took care of the family, paid the mortgage, and put food on the table. And now all of a sudden, tens of millions, we already have 22 million people who have filed for unemployment in just the last 4 or 5 weeks. That's going to go to 30 million in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Irony of this, Crom, the party that declared war on poverty in 1964 now is doing everything it possibly can to increase poverty in 2020.
That is such a strong point, and it there needs to be a real awakening in this country. And by the way, religious services are part of the First Amendment. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Why not have if the governors are going to take control of the churches, shouldn't the governors and the government take control of the press? It's in the same amendment.
Yeah.
Why not?
Or as they did in New Jersey, Crom, the Attorney General of New Jersey and the governor have apparently ordered the arrest of a woman who organized a peaceable assembly, you know, like it's allowed in the Constitution. They've ordered her arrest for doing that, to protest his policies of extremely shutting the state down.
Yeah, and it'll be very interesting to see if that is an overreach, and that I don't know what they call it when you're a government employee and you're acting as a government employee. It'll be interesting to see if somebody can so-called pierce the corporate veil or pierce the government veil and be able to sue those people individually. Because it is clear in the Constitution that you have the right to peaceably assemble and protest. And by the way, every time the left protested or destroyed property against Trump, The left said, "Oh, they're just protesting, and that's that they're exercising their constitutional rights." You don't see anybody on the left now defending people doing exactly the same thing, except in this case, they're actually protesting for their way of life.
Yeah,
their income, for their ability to feed their families and pay their mortgages.
The governor of Washington State, a far lefty who's climate change, global warming guy, Jay Inslee, said on one of the programs Sunday that the president, by encouraging and saying kind words about these protesters exercising their First Amendment rights in Michigan and other states, here in Tennessee as well, said that the president was encouraging insubordination and insurrection.
Yeah, I saw that. And in order for somebody to be insubordinate, what position do they have to be in vis-a-vis the other party?
Inferior.
They have to be inferior. And don't government people claim, especially elected officials, don't they claim to be public servants?
They're acting like petty tyrants. Yeah.
They are acting exactly like, by the way, John Meacham accuses Trump. These people are acting not like kings, they're acting like tyrants. Because a king can be benevolent. A tyrant by definition is not.
We're gonna have
and
to get
that
our
is what they're doing.
We're gonna have to get our good friend whom we've not yet met. The historian John Meacham, who lives in Nashville, who says bad things about the president, we have to get him to comment on that.
We'll watch. He'll be on some of the phone. we'll see because he is. I'm serious here. He is a historian. He knows what tyranny is.
Yeah,
and we'll see whether or not he can identify it when it's of his party.
And that's Crom Carmichael on the constitutionality of all these lockdowns by the various governors around the country. Up next, Washington journalist Neil McCabe's gives us some insight on what Nancy Pelosi wants to do to change how Congress operates. We'll be back after this.
This is Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy. Now, back to Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy.
And welcome back to Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy. Neil McCabe was a colleague of mine at Breitbart for a long time and a great guy. And he is now a Washington journalist, and he knows the ways of Washington. We're talking to him earlier this week about how Nancy Pelosi wants to change how Congress operates.
Michael. Good morning to you, sir.
Well, so the Democrats now want to have proxy voting in Washington in the House of Representatives. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I must have been in high school when didn't Senator Pete Wilson have to vote in a gurney?
Yes.
For a big Reagan vote,
yes,
and probably my best friend in D.C., Brian Darling, worked for many years for Rand Paul, and he told me that they called him at 2 a.m. for a vote, and he showed up in his pajamas, bathrobe, and slippers, and he's like, "Okay, now I'm going to bed. Now I'm going back to bed." You know? Like, and people are like, "Hey, why didn't you dress up?" He's like, "Why don't you schedule these when you know you need my vote? How about scheduling it at a different time?" It is a major constitutional shift if we allow this change to happen. A lot of times what happens in the House and the Senate is, like, say, a senator might have surgery, and so a Republican senator, say, has surgery, they'll reach out to a Democrat, and the Democrat will also excuse themselves as a courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
Not really needed in the House because there are so many votes sort of like swashing around with 435.
Mm-hmm.
But there are cases when, you tell your leadership, hey, I can't be here for the vote for whatever reason. And they're like, okay, in the House, they'll hold you to it and they'll say, okay, but, you know, when I need your vote to outlaw puppies, then it better be there.
Yeah. Well, you know what I see this as? This is the continued destruction of the institution of the House of Representatives by Nancy Pelosi, begun in others, but begun really when they got rid of regular order in determining budgets, right? And now all they want to do is elect a speaker, Nancy Pelosi, who basically tells everybody in Congress, well, this is what we're going to pass. And there won't be any deliberation. It will be being a member of the House of Representatives will be utterly meaningless. You'll just be a shill. That's what it looks like to me.
And let's not pretend that the Republicans haven't been part of this.
Yeah, I agree.
And, I said it before and I'll say it again. conservatives have found a home in the Republican Party, but the Republican Party is run by left-wing staffers and consultants who are absolutely all in on making, in the Washington establishment. Paul Ryan, when he took over in 2015, mm-hmm. he said he was going to restore regular order.
Didn't happen.
It was a lie. In fact, mm-hmm. the same Paul Ryan, when he was the budget chairman, in going into right after the 2014 midterm, the Republicans won the Senate. He cut a special deal with the Democrats. Patty Murray was chairwoman of the Senate Budget Committee. Ryan cut a deal during that lame duck to have a 2-year budget. He deliberately cut a special deal with the help of Boehner pushing it through so that the Republican Senate wouldn't have an influence on the budget. He deliberately cut out the Republicans so that he could cut a deal with the Democrats before they lost control of the Senate. And I think people had 12 minutes to read that bill?
Yeah.
Before they just rammed it down their throat. And Ryan tried the same thing with the repeal and replace bill, which they dropped on a Monday at 6. So basically what happens is, people fly in. Basically, the House of Representatives works between Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. On a Monday at 6 p.m., Paul Ryan released the text of his repeal and replace bill before anybody even knew what was going on. People were still flying in. They hadn't even, their planes landed and their phones started blowing up. And, we saw what happened to that thing. I mean, it was a disaster. Because people were standing up, they were saying, hey, what happened to regular order? Rand Paul, again, almost got arrested by the Capitol Police because he tried to walk in the room where Paul Ryan's team and the insurance lobbyists were rewriting the repeal and replace bill that everybody thought was going to be the 2015 bill, which was a completely different bill. And so my point is, Michael, the Republicans are in on it, too.
Yeah, a lot of them are. Some of them aren't, though. Some of them are fighting the good fight. But, it's a tough...
Well, the conservatives. People who identify as conservatives are a really different animal. You just happen to be in the Republican Party because that's the apparatus that's available to you.
Well, speaking of these 800-page bills that nobody has a chance to read except maybe 10 minutes before they pass. So the Senate passed yesterday a bill to increase the funding for the SBA loan to small businesses, the Paycheck Protection Program. They ran through $349 billion in about 7 working days, and now they're going to put another $250 billion in. There's, $25 billion for testing and more for hospitals. Do you see that coming up and voted on by the House of Representatives tomorrow and signed into law tomorrow?
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy, the head of the Republicans in the House, he's going to play ball on this. And, you know, he's kind of a mixed bag. He, you know, when that $2 trillion plus bill went through.
The CARES Act in February, on April 3rd.
Yeah, the CARES Act. House conservatives were going to go through that and sort of try to claw back some of the fork. And Kevin McCarthy said, no. We made a deal with the Democrats, and we are going to stick with it because it's a matter of honor that we allow this pork to go through.
Yeah.
So, I mean, McCarthy. Remember, McCarthy was a McCarthy was an intern. McCarthy was a chief of staff. McCarthy is a creature of Capitol Hill, and you know he's not gonna he's not gonna cause Pelosi any problems. Believe me.
Yeah, and that famously, Thomas Massie. Yeah, when the CARES Act was passed, he wanted to have an opportunity to oppose it because of the pork. And the wrath of the president, the wrath of many.
Well, the Republican leadership, Cheney, who's the from Wyoming, is head of the Republican conference. She gave money to Massey's opponent. And it's like, and it turns out that he's like some kind of weird fringe crazed racist. And so she tried to get the money back, and she asked for the money back, and I don't know if the guy's going to give it to her back. But, you know, Massey's looking better and better, and it's another example of, you know, how the Republican leadership goes after conservatives. Massey once told me that John Boehner offered somebody $2 million to run against Massey in the primary. Boehner said, I'll fund your campaign at least $2 million. The guy traveled to Massey's district, which is basically an inhabitable spot in Kentucky. And basically, the guy says, nah, I'm not.
He didn't want to represent the district.
I don't want to live there.
Well, you know, Massey is a very interesting guy. He's an MIT grad, an engineer, an entrepreneur. He's a multimillionaire, independent, kind of more libertarian. You know, I think you're right. He's looking better and better every day, and we'll follow his career with great interest.
That's Neil McCabe, Washington journalist, with an insider's view of what Nancy Pelosi is trying to do to the House of Representatives in the United States. Up next, our good friend Steve Bannon, my former boss and mentor and good friend, who now has a broadcast called War Room Pandemic. You're listening to The Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy, back after this.
Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy.
Welcome back to Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy. This is the weekly program that focuses on what the world will be like after the coronavirus lockdown orders end and as we await the development of a vaccine. No one has been more on top of the coronavirus pandemic than Steve Bannon, my friend and mentor, former boss, the guy who hired me at Breitbart News back in 2012, the guy who took over a Trump campaign in August of 2016 that didn't look like it was going to win, but he led it to victory, one of the most improbable political victories in modern American history. He became the chief strategist for the White House under President Trump, left there in July of 2017, and now is the host of a very, very successful podcast, War Room Pandemic. Here's Steve Bannon.
Hey, Michael, Patrick Leahy. How you doing, brother? Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, first, hats off to you for your spectacularly good War Room Pandemic blog. We broadcast it your special Saturday, every 2 hours that you have it on Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern. It's nobody in the country, no one is covering the pandemic at the level that you are, particularly what the Chinese Communist Party has done. You noted in your appearance on Maria Bartiromo that the president said something very significant, that the Chinese Communist Party was knowingly responsible for the spread of this pandemic. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that, Steve?
Well, listen, if you're out in the listening audience of the great reach of Michael Patrick Leahy's newspapers, and particularly in Tennessee, you have to own something, you have to embrace something. You know, this is not the fault of some governor, this is not the fault of some mayor, it's the president of the United States, the Senate. You're at home with no job, no pension fund, no clear direction of where we're going to head on this thing. You know, 41,000 of your countrymen dead in the biggest mass casualty event in American history. And it's the sole responsibility of the Chinese Communist Party in Beijing. President Trump said knowingly responsible. So let's leave aside a second the labs they have, the testing they've been doing, the gain-of-function experiments they've been trying to do to weaponize things, the weapons. Leave all that aside. There are going to be intelligence investigations, you know, world medical investigations, all types of investigations going on. That, put a pin in that, because that's very important. We have to get to the bottom of it. We particularly have to get the right genome sequence to actually get a vaccine. So that's one. But right now, today, we know that they're 100% responsible for all the deaths and all the economic carnage. Why? They knew as a matter of fact that this was human-to-human transmission and community spread in late December of 2019. That was the latest they knew. I could actually argue they knew about it maybe in November or early December, but it's incontrovertible that they knew about it in late December. The Taiwanese CDC notified the World Health Organization. One of my broadcast partners in China went up on a show on the 31st. And most importantly, the doctors in Wuhan, this Dr. Li you keep hearing about, these young medical professionals that had gone to medical school with each other, were on WeChat saying, hey, we're being, you know, there's a ton of SARS-like pneumonia patients coming in here with something we've never seen before. That Dr. Li and his other cohorts were pulled before a investigative apparatus of the police, tortured and forced to sign a false confession to say he was rumor mongering and he was going to go down a social credit, his kids wouldn't be getting to school. They did all that in late December, early January. They came here to the White House to sign the trade deal on the 13th, 14th, and 15th, never told about it in our government. The entire time they were planning to shut down Hubei province, which is the size of France, and Wuhan, which is 40% bigger than New York City, to sequester them. At that same time, in the entire month of January, they never stopped travel from China to the rest of the world. And the Chinese people are totally innocent here. This is not about the Chinese people. They're the biggest victims. It's the Chinese Communist Party. They let 350,000 people fly from China to the United States. Why is New York City the hot zone? Why have, 40% of our casualties come from New York City? It's because of JFK. That's where people flew into. The other thing is that the World Health Organization, who are the useful idiots of the Chinese Communist Party, Tedros and those guys, on the 12th of January, and then tweeted it out on documents we have. They went public with a press release on the 12th. Then on the 14th, tweeted out that in their work and conversations with senior medical officials of the Chinese Communist Party, the Minister of Health, there was no there was no human-to-human transmission and no community spread. That's on the 14th of January. That is a stone-cold lie. The University of Southampton did a study, and it said Scott Gottlieb, the former FDA guy, on CNBC every day, he refers to it. The Southampton study done by some Chinese doctors who left China says that if the Chinese had moved to suppress this and let the world know this in late December, 95% of the deaths, 95% of the economic carnage would have been stopped. All they had to do was be straightforward and honest with people. We would have handled this. It was their lies and misrepresentations. Now let me get to even a worse fact. That starting in late January, knowing they had a massive outbreak, they limited travel inside of China, but not to the world. At the same time, they went around the world to Europe, the United States, and Australia, and vacuumed up all the PPE, the personal protective equipment. They bought they're the number one supplier of masks and PPE in the world. They bought the rest of the world's supply. They bought over 2 billion masks. Why did they do that? to make sure they had it in case the outbreak got out of control. Number two was to then use it strategically to make the West kowtow to them, including the United States, which is what we're doing right now, to get the PPE back. Remember, that personal protective equipment is the key to keep the doctor nurses teams alive, to actually do the testing and then in the ICU units. That is premeditated murder. Every doctor and nurse is dead in northern Italy. And remember, at one time, 10% of the casualties in Italy were doctors and nurses early on. Well, this is one of the reasons that the disease got out of control in northern Italy and killed so many people. The Chinese Communist Party, the facts, and when President Trump finally stood up to him and said, hey, no more travel here to the United States, and we're going to quarantine every person that comes in on the 31st of January, Joe Biden takes the party line of Beijing. He says it's racist, it's nativist, it's xenophobic. So when he had a decision to what side he was going to play on, he joined the side of the Chinese Communist Party. Look, it's incumbent upon the American people right now to fully understand and embrace this. Understand what happened here. This is the fog of war. So separate out the signal from the noise. The noise is all the back chatter and World Health Organization, yes, they're all running dogs or useful idiots for the communists. But the responsibility of the destruction of your personal life, of your community, of your city, your state, and your nation is because of the Chinese Communist Party. And here's what's the most outrageous of all. In 2,000 years of Christianity, we had an Easter where we did not celebrate as a group. That is the responsibility not of your governor. That's the responsibility of the Chinese Communist Party. They're the ones that did that. If you haven't had your traditional Passover dinner, if you're not able to worship like you traditionally do on Ramadan, and if you weren't able to worship the risen Christ like you've done it for generations and generations and generations, the responsibility of that is with the Chinese Communist Party, with President Xi, Wang Qishan, and the rest of the gangsters that run that organization.
The Chinese Communist Party, they are adversaries of the United States of America. Steve, why are, I'll call them the Manchurian media, the mainstream media, and the Democratic Party, why are they pushing the Chinese Communist propaganda line?
Well, it's more, listen, it's more than the Democratic Party. We have a problem in this. The financial, cultural, and business elite. This is why Donald Trump's president. The managed decline of our country over the last 20 or 25 years is because the elites in our country lost faith in the Judeo-Christian West. They lost faith in the United States of America, and particularly working class and middle class people in America. And they chose the side of the Chinese Communist Party. Remember, our biggest allies and the biggest victims of the CCP are the citizens of China. It's the citizens of Wuhan that bore the brunt of this, of the lies and misrepresentations. This is Donald Trump as president because he tried to reverse the decline of this country and stand up for it. I'll tell you why people are hesitant to take him on. They're brutal. Look what they just did to the world. They're the enemies of the Chinese people. They're the enemies of the citizens of the United States. They're the enemies of all mankind. They have a tremendous amount of money, a tremendous amount of influence, a tremendous amount of power. And if you try to take them on, you better be prepared to get punched because they punch hard. But my point is that this is just like Hitler and the Nazis in 1938 or 39. If we do not stand up to them today, and I mean today, we're going to rue that fact in the next year or two, because now's the valley of decision. There can be no more happy talk, no more spin, no more accommodations with them. This is black and white. They are guilty of allowing, and this doesn't even get into the fact of what happened in those labs and do they have a bioweapons program. We'll find that all out over time. But we know for a fact they are guilty. This is a biological Chernobyl. They knew exactly what was going on. They hid that because they thought the regime, just like the Soviets did, they thought the regime would topple from power.
Well, Steve Bannon doesn't mince words about the evil nature of the Chinese Communist Party and how they are, in fact, the enemy of the United States, the Chinese people, and really of the entire world. You heard it right here on Paradigm Shift. That's it for this program this week. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. Join me next Saturday here on Talk Radio 98.3 and 1510 WLAC, and listen to the Tennessee Star Report with Michael Patrick Leahy. That's every weekday on this same station. Talk Radio 98.3 and 1510 WLAC, weekday mornings from 5 a.m. to 8. Hope you have a great weekend. I'll talk to you Monday and then also again throughout the week and on Saturday at 6 a.m.
This has been Paradigm Shift with Michael Patrick Leahy.